Welcome to On the Mark, a podcast series that explores the effects on various businesses and industries of the COVID pandemic and how companies have learned to survive and thrive during these difficult times and beyond. I am your host, Howard Mark Rubin, and this podcast series came about as a result of my realization, dealing as a lawyer for many clients in many different industries, that this pandemic is different than other crises we faced. This was a generational change that has affected every industry, every person, and they've dealt with it differently. It's affected people differently, but no one has been unaffected by COVID. It's had such a diverse effect on industries, and we're going to today speak about how it affected the medical industry, specifically the medical equipment industry, with a company. It's a fascinating company out of Israel that you're going to learn about, that does that incorporates AI and incorporates newer technologies, and we're going to discuss how that's affected. It's a company based in Israel by the name of Scopus Labs. I want to welcome our guest today, Amir Fari, who is the Chief Commercial Officer at Scopio Labs, which is a leader in full-field digital cell morphology, overseeing the development and execution of the commercial strategy, sales, and marketing of the company. Is what he does. He brings 30 years experience in sales, marketing, strategic alliances, and operations. Prior to Scopio, Amir was the Chief Business Development Officer at WalkMe, a NASDAQ company. He joined WalkMe during the company's early years and was responsible for defining, building, and driving the company's alliances and channel strategies and execution, fueling the company's rapid exponential growth and IPO. He's a graduate of Tel Aviv University and holds an MBA from Boston University. Today's podcast is sponsored by the Strategic Forum, a group of business leaders whose purpose is to meet and help industries grow and thrive and help themselves, help each other grow and thrive. Welcome, Amir.
Thank you. Thank you, Howard.
So,
thanks for having me.
Amir, tell us a little about Scopus Labs and its exciting products that it's and where it is right now.
Sure. So Scopio Labs. Scopio, it's not Scorpio, it's Scopio.
Scopio, I mispronounced it.
Scopio, from microscope.
Ah, okay.
Is a full-field digital cell morphology. Now, that's a mouthful definition. Basically, what we do, we are the first company that is able to scan blood at the required or the equivalent to a microscope of 100x oil immersion resolution, which means it's a high resolution in 100x focus of a full blood sample of a patient. Because we're the only company that is actually able to do that, once we're able to digitize the entire sample, then we unleash all the benefits of digital, which means we can deploy AI on top to understand what's going on. We can allow remote connectivity where clinicians, physicians can access and review the samples remotely. And we do it for both blood as well as bone marrow aspects to start with. And it's very, very exciting to see that.
Now, I wanted to, because in the United States, I know that you're aware of it, there was a company that turned out to be a fraud. A lot of people went to jail, called Theranos, which was also making claims that they devised blood tests that required a small amount of blood that could perform rapid tests that these claims were later proven to be false. How do you differ from Theranos?
Okay. That's a great question. We're often asked that, and I think the good thing that Theranos did for Scopio is that it created at least some awareness for the need for something like this. But Scopio is completely different. First of all, Theranos was for kind of at the and close to the patient testing, where Scopio, the Scopio end users are labs, hematology labs, and pathology labs, those that do currently do the review under the microscope we just kind of help help them with our technology. Just so you understand how old school still this industry is that most blood scans are still, once they have to be looked under the microscope, it's a very, you know, tedious job for the lab technologist as well as the physician, where they have to review and count 100 cells and more. That's the requirement of white blood cells, red blood cells, platelets. And this is now something that, you know, our technology is able to do through, you know, computational vision, digitizing the blood, and you get a full digital image of the blood, and then understanding what's going on. It is a FDA cleared and CE in Europe. So this is a real thing.
Right. You also have some American partners. I think Siemens invest in American, some big companies are involved in this.
Yeah, so there are a few big players in this space of hematology diagnosis, and we've recently announced major partnerships with both Beckman Coulter and Siemens Healthineers. These are one of the two leading names in this space, and these great partners kind of decided to bet on us because they understand that, you know, Scopio unleashes the true digitization of blood cell morphology.
Well, I think it's clear that you guys are the real deal. You're not another Theranos. But let's talk about, this series is about COVID. And I know you're in Israel. We dealt with, actually in the United States, different states, I think, dealt with it different ways nationally. How did Israel deal with the COVID pandemic?
Yeah, so in Israel, for those who are not familiar with Israel, Israel is a country who's, you know, relatively very small. I mean, size-wise, it's the size of Rhode Island, give or take, and with a population of a little north of 9 million people. And yet Israel was very bullish when COVID hit to do something about it. There are various factors of why Israel was able to do it, but like the bottom line was that Israel, just for comparison, Israel, by the end of 2020, Israel administered almost 11 doses per 100 population. Just the next higher up was 3.5 per 100. That was Bahrain and 1.4 in the United Kingdom. I don't know what the U.S. number was. But Israel was fast to respond and to vaccinate the population. They signed a big deal with Pfizer. They got their hands on many vaccinations, like a large number of vaccinations relatively to the number of population. And also because of how the Israeli health system is organized, where it's basically their major community healthcare providers, that they're able to, you know, quickly determine, you know, how they're going to roll it out, the criteria for who gets it. And I think, you know, on a personal level, I think, you know, when did lockdown start in Israel? I think it was similar to the U.S.
We were March. Like in March. Yeah, that's when we were.
March, yes. March, I think I got my dosage late 2020, or my Pfizer shot late 2020. So it was really fast compared to the rest of the world. Also, most of the Israel is because of the size of geographical size, it was hard. It wasn't hard to mobilize both, you know, the people, staff, and the vaccines, and to get people in line to get those. So we were, you know, also from an economical perspective, Israel was relatively not impacted by the effects of COVID in its economy. And actually, if we talk about that and kind of talk about the economical impact, Israel is also, you know, known as a high, you know, the startup nation. There's, you know, tons of startups in many different verticals, you know, medical, enterprise SaaS, food tech, and so forth. What happened with COVID, as a result of COVID, is it basically kind of taught the world is that we have to figure out a way to do business, you know, the show must go on. And it really unleashed the aspects of, you know, digitization and why, you know, telecommuting, remote conferences, things like that, and why you could still do business remotely. And because many of Israel startups were already accustomed to, you know, selling from Israel remotely, they didn't have to get on the plane. We could do, people could work, you know, remotely. We could sell remotely, service customers remotely, and so forth. And we were kind of ready for that. So many Israeli companies, you know, both Scopio Labs, where I'm right now, and my prior company, WalkMe, we actually saw, you know, things getting better from us business-wise because of COVID, because it did, you know, enable digitization or acceleration of digitization in the world of business.
And do you think that now that we're on the other side of COVID pretty much, are things going to change and go back, or were these changes in the way that you do business in these high-tech industries going to just continue?
It's a great question. I mean, I don't think we're going to ever go back to the way it was before. We are going back to, in some areas, to finding, you know, the right balance between, you know, if we talk about, you know, remote workforce, right? The future of work, the future of doing business. I mean, you know, the jury is still out of, like, what is the right balance between doing things, you know, completely remotely, which now you can do because of, you know, Zoom, Teams, and other technologies that enable that, to where do you not lose the interpersonal touch and connection with your customers, your employees, and so forth. And again, speaking from Israel, and I see some companies are going back to a kind of a hybrid style where, you know, 2-3 days in the office, 2-3 days from home. And some companies that just going back to, like, come and work in the office, and some that, you know, the employee chooses. You know, you do what, as long as you get things done, you choose whether you'd rather do it from home, from somewhere exotic, which again enable also more and more of you know, the digital nomads, those that do work from wherever, or from the office.
See, but isn't it different?
I don't think we're ever going to go back to a full office.
Isn't it different that when you're in the sales arm and you have a sales arm, you have to introduce your product to the medical field, whether it's hospitals or doctors or whoever it is? I've found when I'm doing sales, I can't do it effectively remotely. There's nothing like looking someone in the eye, having an in-person conversation. It's not the same as Zoom. It's not the same as remote. And while other aspects of business can be done remotely, I personally don't feel that sales, doing sales, is as effective when you do it remotely. How do you feel about that?
You are right, but, and there's a big but, and that but is at what point and when do you inject this, you know, the face-to-face connectivity? And I'll explain why. I think by the fact that we are able to do things, you know, remotely and connect remotely, we can, and you asked about sales, so I'll answer with sales, is that we can increase our pipeline of opportunities and push through our sales pipeline funnel a lot more opportunities doing things remotely, because I can meet a lot more prospects, I can be a lot more meetings, I can handle a lot more deals at the same time. However, when I feel, and I, as the sales leader, that in order to close the deal, I need to meet the prospects in person, at that point, I'll do that. So it's not that I'm doing it automatically, that with every prospect we get on a plane, obviously, the CAC, the customer acquisition cost, is expensive when you get on the plane and go and meet with every prospect. There's a value that. You just need to find the right balance between, you know, when do you do this to, you know, what else are you missing in growing your business, your pipeline of opportunities, when you're not meeting that customer face to face. But you'll be also surprised to hear that, you know, haven't done it at Scopio yet, but maybe we will soon. But both at WalkMe and the company prior to that, is that we were able to sell and close deals at, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and sometimes millions dollars in ARR, annual recurring revenue, without ever meeting the customer face to face. And these were areas that, you know, traditionally, you know, you had to go and meet them. You had to go and take them out for golfing. You had to go and meet them at events. And now we're used to and are able to do that. So the answer is that, like, you need to understand that what is the right balance and when do you inject the personal face-to-face into the sales cycle in order to increase, you know, your deal conversion rate.
That's interesting. Do you find that I found in my industry and in most service industries here that there's an age gap, that older people need more face-to-face. They're used to face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
But Generation Z or the millennials, they kind of feel that they would just like to be remote. They want to work from their homes. They want to work from wherever they want to work. Do you think long-term that's healthy for our society, that having kids on TikTok, having people working remotely, having a lot of people experience loneliness because they're not together? Do you think, even if it's effective as to what you're doing, do you think it's a healthy thing to be working remotely to such a large extent?
Wow, that is the you know, the trillion-dollar question. I think everybody's trying to figure out is what is the Gen Z generation missing by, you know, the changes that kind of technology enable them to have a different lifestyle, working style, and so forth. Your question is it going to be better in what they miss out? What's better? That's the thing. From a productivity perspective, from an ability to have a much wider exposure to a lot more things in their lives, yes, they're going to be better. I see this. I see this with my, you know, I'll date myself. I'm in my 50s, so I see my young ones, and, you know, how much more they know and are exposed to than I am through all the way they do business, or, you know, whatever it is they do. But they're also lacking on some interpersonal skills that I find valuable. They don't find it valuable, by the way. They don't see that they're missing out on something. So back to, you know, I'm sending the question back to you. What's better? Who defines what's better?
Well, I think that when we're talking about better, you know, I'm not talking about what's effective. In your industry, and I don't find it in all industries, but I can understand it in your industry, how working remotely it can be seamless and doesn't have, business-wise, a negative effect, then you can adapt to it very quickly. I'm just concerned with all of these younger people, these Gen Z people, that there's got to be we're losing the connectivity of people getting in the same room. For instance, I like to be in a conference room and kick around ideas. I have trouble doing that on Zoom. I guess younger people can do that on a Zoom conference. When I say Zoom, a Zoom-like conference, mm-hmm. Microsoft Teams or whatever it is, can do that. But I think that they lose something in terms of picking up cues from people, understanding what's important. When I'm trying to sell someone something, for instance, I'm not trying to sell them without just my product. I'm trying to understand what's important to them. And to understand mm-hmm. what's important to them, I have to understand them. I have to see them. I have to talk to them. I have maybe not even what I'm doing in business. They don't seem to have, it's not true for everyone, but they don't seem to have that gene or that ability to do that. And I know you have salespeople in the U.S. here. When they're doing their sales calls, they're doing most of their sales calls remotely here, or are they going out to see the customers? It's mostly remotely.
They're mostly remotely. And not only that they're doing it mostly remotely, they're doing it mostly remotely to an industry, you know, the health tech. Mm-hmm. You said it earlier. It's a kind of a conservative vertical. It's slow to adopt. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we're starting to see where it's starting to work with remote meetings with prospects. But, and that's back to the but, is that, you know, we do try to inject some personal relationship and connectivity. I'm still a big believer that at the end of the day, people buy from people. It doesn't matter how great your product or your service are. It's like the other side needs to trust you. And that trust, I think, is better, stronger when you meet the person in person. And I see that. I mean, I manage people. Some of my team members I've never met in person yet. Some of my customers and partners I haven't met in person yet. As soon as you meet them in person, and even though it's for 15 minutes, half an hour, there's something else in the dynamics that makes it better, I think, for both sides. Again, I see the value in that. You see the value in that. Not sure the younger generation sees the value in that. They think many of them think that, you know, they could still do things remotely because many of them make their, you know, buying decisions remotely without talking to anybody. They don't want to talk to anybody. They'll read, they'll do whatever they need to research online through, you know, social networks, through reading stuff, and make a decision and don't call me. I don't want to talk to you. So, you know, maybe we are wired in a different way where we see that value that they don't see. And that's back to what we talked before. It's like, is ours better than theirs? They'll argue otherwise.
I wanted to talk a minute because it's like I can't go a day without hearing about AI. AI's to me has become the most invasive thing in our society. That every part of our society. Some people think it's good. Some people think it's bad. But it's becoming a dominant force in our society. And I know in the medical field, I can understand its utilization. I think in your devices, AI has been mm-hmm. a tremendous benefit and has and has a great pro result. But what do you think of AI generally? Do we need to get a better control of AI in society? Or is it something that we should just let flow?
Even if we wanted to, I don't know if we could at this point. I think there are some technological aspects that are now stronger than us, and you know the train has left already because the value it generates, and this is not just AI, it's technology in general. I mean, you win on some fronts and you lose on some fronts. But I think the pros, are way more than the cons. And that applies to AI as well. The downsides, the the things we were fearing about, that this is going to take over our life, and one day, you know, AI machines will kill us and take over and so forth. Yes, this might happen. But the benefits outweigh the downsides. I'll tell you that if you ask me about the space of medicine and why I stepped into this, and this is just a side note, this is my, I joined the company 5-6 months ago, and this is my first time in the health tech space. And this was a decision I made, that this is some sort of a bet into an industry that is on the verge of being transformed big time. You know, we're still, you know, as much as technology we still see in medicine and we read out there, it's still behind other verticals, commerce, finance, and so forth. And I think, and this is just not just me. I mean, if you read some of the biggest, you know, institutional investors and investors in general, they'll tell you that probably the next big tech giant is going to come up in the med space. And on a personal opinion level, I really believe that in a few years, I don't know how long it's going to take, 10, 20, 30 years, we're going to be monitored, analyzed, and treated by machines. And the machines, and I'm probably going to be upsetting some physicians out there, the machines are probably, in most cases, will do a better job than each individual physician will be doing on their own. Because oftentimes, if you think about the decision-making process of any clinician, physician, is that, you know, they look at data coming from the patient. They look at data of statistics of what does it mean, and they use some algorithm that they're aware of, or they read about, to determine what does the patient have and how to treat it. The machine will win. A combination of, you know, access to a lot more data and constantly learning powerful AI algorithms will do a much better job. And both you and I will be at a point where we'll prefer to get that. You know, I'll tell you even more than that. I was at a conference, a pathology conference, a couple of months ago in New Orleans. And there was, I sat through a presentation by one of the physicians about AI and the future of pathology. And he ended his presentation with a slide with a quote from another pathologist where it said, once AI is proven and validated in the field of pathology, the question is going to be unethical not to use it. He ended the presentation like that. And I went and spoke with him, and I said, I find it, you know, very interesting. And we had another physician, another hematopathologist join the discussion. And he said, forget unethical. It's going to be malpractice, because that's how you'd want to use those technologies, because you're going to be providing a better patient care that way. And if you as a physician choose not to use it, that's malpractice. So this is where we're heading. It's going to happen. Mark my words. Let's talk in 10 years, 15 years, and then I'm going to say I told you so. Because there's no way back. We are on the verge of, you know, AI and robotics in this field of medicine to really transform our patient care.
So if we had another pandemic today, I know Moderna had their procedure in finding an antidote or a treatment for COVID. But if that happened today, I guess AI would be the way that we'd find a cure or a way to handle almost any disease or bacteria or any problem that we had. Is that how you see it in the future?
Yes. I don't know if, you know, AI would be the one to find it. But you would be, I mean, maybe that will be the case, but more likely, I mean, it all depends on when this happens, but AI is going to be leveraged to reach vaccination resolution faster. These are all algorithms that are constantly learning and they have the power of the machine to do things that, you know, we as human beings are not able to process that amount of data that can be so complex with ever-changing algorithms that change rapidly, that the computer can do better and faster.
Well, Amir,
we just need to figure out to control it.
Amir, you set forth an exciting world in the future, and I want to thank you for joining On the Mark today.
Thank you, Howard.
Thank you very much.